Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast. This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy, and you're listening to
Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I like watching scary movies, so I watch them so that you don't have to. We are missing Henley this week. She is on her honeymoon.
She's on her honeymoon. Oh, my God. And it looks great.
It looks really nice.
Be on Henley's honeymoon.
Yeah.
Specifically Henley's. I would like to be on that honeymoon. Tim can leave. I would love to be there with her, but we're so glad that she's having that lovely, lovely time. And we'll do the best we can to make do without her. It's never an easy task. We don't like to do it, but such is life sometimes. And other than that, loss in our lives this moment. Did anything scary happen to us this week?
I did have something a little scary happen, which is that I'm getting a tattoo removed. I had my second session of removal, and I went this time. First time I used numbing cream, this time I didn't. I went straight for it because I read that apparently the numbing cream can make it less effective because of something of it, like blocking the laser a bit. I don't know. So I decided I'm just going to fucking go for it. And man, you guys, it really hurts.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah, I've always heard that tattoo removal is worse than a tattoo. It hurts more.
Takes way longer, hurts a lot more, it's way more expensive. Yep.
Cool. It's crazy. It's like, I mean, I guess a laser seems more painful than a needle. But I'm sort of like, what is it feel like?
The best way to describe it is it feels like a laser shooting into your skin. Like it just,
that sucks.
It feels hot. It like burns.
Ooh, yeah.
It's like burning and cutting at the same time of feeling.
Yeah, I mean, duh. It's a laser, which is hot. And like, as soon as it feels burns exactly awful.
How you would think a laser would feel. Yep.
Like, do you think a burn is worse than a cut?
Yeah,
I think it is. I don't really want to sit with this question, but no, I'm so sorry. How long was it still quick?
Oh, it's so fast. Yes, that's the one upside, is it's a lot faster than getting a tattoo because they only have to go over it once. It's like do, and this is a pretty small tattoo, so it literally is less than a minute.
And is it going away? Do you see it going away?
And it's not a lingering pain. It doesn't hurt afterwards.
Oh, that's cool. It's not like sore.
It can be like slightly tender, but not bad.
Not like a tattoo can be.
Yeah.
Now I just want another tattoo. I mean, I always want another tattoo, but
I don't hate the tattoo. I just don't like where it is. It's too visible for me.
Yeah. And you've hated it for a long time. And look, I think people should do whatever they want to do with their own bodies. Put a tattoo on it. Take a tattoo off of it. Do whatever you got to do. But and I'm sorry. And so will you do the numbing cream next time? Like,
no, I don't think so.
No. Wow.
Now that I've done it, it's over so quickly that it's just,
yeah,
I know that I can do it. So I'm just going to do it. Yep.
Whew. How many more sessions? 5, 4, 6?
TBD. No, sometimes they take up to like 15.
Gah.
Hopefully not that many. And they're like 2 months apart. So yeah, it can take years to remove a tattoo.
It's just like shooting the ink deeper into your body, right? No, it like breaks it up.
It breaks. Okay. This could be too long of a conversation because I find it absolutely fascinating because it actually, yes, it is breaking down the ink into smaller particles that then your immune system can like digest.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really,
that's weird crazy. And cool.
Yeah, I know. I know.
I mean, the idea of tattoos in general is crazy. Like someone like shoots ink deep and like into your skin in such a way that it just like stays there. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And I understand why people just get tattoos covered instead of removed, because like, you know,
it's a big process.
Like I have a really big tattoo on my arm and I'm it's not even that big, but I mean, it's like enough. It's like filled, you know. And so if I was going to try to remove that, they'd have to laser my whole forearm would, and like, yeah, no way.
It'd be really hard. Yeah,
I guess, you know, that would suck. That's the point. It's permanent. That's sort of why people do it. Wow. Well, yep. You're very brave, as we all know.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
What about you? Anything scary?
Nothing quite along that trajectory, but so for Christmas this year, I gifted my family, my parents and my sister and her husband, like a Zoom class that we all were going to do together, a truffle making class, because we all like chocolate. Who doesn't? And scheduling was a little bit tricky there on the East Coast. I'm in California and my sister and her husband have children. And so it was like trying to find a time was tricky. And so it was today. Today was the time. Had to do it during when my sister's 3-year-old is napping, which meant it was 10 o'clock this morning for me and Joel, and it is a Sunday. And so we basically just woke up and then like made chocolate and ate a bunch of chocolate and were on a screen for 2 hours and like made a bunch of chocolate before we had consumed like anything else. And then now I'm here and I feel completely deranged. Like I can't believe how insane I feel. It just
you've been having too much computer time.
I've been having absolute, which I was is also actually the scary thing, but I'm like trying to not just talk about it. Look, people have to work. That's the life we live. That's the society we're in. I have been working so much. I don't have really like I could take no time off and I would never be done. You know, that's like where I'm at right now.
I know exactly.
So the anytime I take off is because I'm like, you're not going to do work right now. But it's not because there isn't work to be done. And that is a specific headspace to live in.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
And so also, yeah, it's like it's Sunday. You know, tomorrow is when in my brain I'm like, OK, you go back to doing work. And then all day today, I'll have been on screens, part of that just like eating chocolate. And I just feel so crazy. I feel so crazy. It's a weird way to live. You know, I sat outside for like 10 minutes. I'll do it again after this, you know, just trying to do it. Yep. I had an orange that helped, I think. I don't know. I don't know, man.
I got to go outside more too. That's a goal of mine as well.
It's important. Truly.
It's really important. Yep.
So, you know, just trying to figure it out. It out.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Don't have many pointers. After this, see if it works for me.
Some vitamin C felt good, you know. Be careful with that. Careful with that acid, Sammy.
I know. That heartburn.
It's tough.
Life is tricky.
Life is tricky.
We have a couple pieces of haunted housekeeping for the listeners. Just real quick, want to say it's your last chance to get merch at TooScaryDidn'tWatch.com.
Last chance.
You got about a week left. It's going to go offline at the end of January. So got a week to purchase your merch. And we have a live show coming up on February 11th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Yep.
We're going to be recapping Knock at the Cabin.
I'm so excited.
So excited. New M. Night Shyamalan movie. We don't know how to say it.
We don't know how to say it.
And you can get tickets to that at moment.co/TSDW.
Mm-hmm. Also linked on our Instagram.
It's a virtual live show. Did I say that?
I don't know, but you're saying it now.
You should know that.
Yes, it's a virtual live show, so it is online. You can stream it right then if you want to be live with us. It also is available for a week after the show date for anyone who purchases tickets. So you can also watch it at your leisure. And I'm very excited to do a new M. Night Shyamalan. They're always crazy. There's going to be something weird going on there.
I like this technique of just saying both versions of Shyamalan.
Just cover your bases.
Shyamalan.
Just cover your bases and say it all. Will we look it up how to pronounce it before the live show? Absolutely not. Absolutely not are we going to know how to say it. But I'm very, very excited for it. Very excited to do another show.
It's going to be great.
They've been great, great fun when we've done them before. And hope to see you all there.
And patrons get 20% off. And if you want to become a patron, you can do that at patreon.com/TSCW podcast. Thank you so much for listening to all these bits
so
of
many links.
Housekeeping.
So many links.
This is a lot. We don't usually do this much. I'm so sorry.
So much housekeeping.
But okay, let's get into today's movie.
Yes.
We have got a good one today. We are going to be talking about Session 9, came out in 2001, directed by Brad Anderson, written by Brad Anderson and Stephen Gavidin, starring Peter Mullen, David Caruso, Stephen Gavidin, Brendan Sexton III, and Josh Lucas. It is available to rent for $3.99, and we have a guest with us today to discuss this film. From fellow HeadGum podcast, Three Black Halflings, Jeremy Cobb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you. This is it's exciting to first of all, that whole intro was just great because like, I don't know, I've guessed it on podcasts, but for some reason, every podcast that I've guessed it on leads with the intro. So I basically got to sit here and watch you guys do a podcast for 10 minutes. And it was just delightful. I was just like, oh, this is great.
Sort of ease you in, you know, here's the vibe.
Exactly. Acclimate myself to the too scary didn't watch waters as I just sort of. Don't want to shock the system too much.
Dip your toe in.
Exactly. This is exciting to get to talk about this movie of all movies, especially because it's one of those movies I feel like most people have never heard of it.
Yes. Had not heard of it.
I sent you a list of a bunch of listener requests. We have like over 200 movies that listeners have requested, and this wasn't on it, right? It was this one that was missing. And yeah, I had heard of it, but like forever ago and forgot it existed. And so, yeah, I'm really glad that you picked it.
Yeah, I first heard about it from the AV Club. I used to go on the AV Club website all the time. Uh-huh. And they did, I think, an article on like a bunch of good horror movies that almost no one has heard of. And this happened to be, I'd actually seen a couple of them, but I saw on there. I was like, huh, interesting. It's got the guy from CSI Miami. And then I watched it with my friend and I was like, whoa, this movie was wild. It is off the wall.
Oh, my God. I can't wait to talk about it. First, I gotta know. Just did anything scary happen to you this week, Jeremy?
Yes. So I realized while we were talking that I got I have two stories, one of which is something that happened this week. The other one relates slightly to the story that Sammy that you were telling about the laser removal in the sense of like something hot coming near you. I'll lead with that one.
All right. Let's hear it.
I may have been like 13, I think I was 14 or 15. And for whatever reason, we had this big wooden crate downstairs in my house and it accidentally like got knocked over and fell onto the nail of my big toe. thankfully, the toe was not broken, but it was one of those situations where there was a cut underneath the toe.
Right.
And so it started turning blue.
Blood underneath it.
Exactly. Oof. And it wasn't coming out, like it wasn't getting released. Yeah. And it got to the point where I had to go to the hospital and they took a metal coil and melted my toenail, like melted a hole in my toenail, which thankfully, unlike a laser, when you were saying laser coming, I was like, I had this like intense image of like this tiny metal coil just being lowered toward my foot.
I like, still viscerally remember. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. You don't forget that.
Unlike the laser, it didn't hurt. Thank goodness.
Oh, good.
Oh, my God.
Man. Yeah.
It was just such a weird experience to see. I've never seen a body like a nail or something melt. So it was just a bizarre. It was so weird.
Oh, bodies are weird. They're very weird.
And the less the more recent story is a lot less gruesome. In fact, not gruesome at all. Just sort of weird, which is that I was staying in Chicago with my girlfriend recently, and her as we were in the middle of watching like just a TV show, there was like this banging at the window on the side of the apartment, just like, and we look and there's this strange man outside like, hey. Hey, can you let me in? And we're like, what? No. And he's like, oh, open your back door. And we're like, no. And she goes to the door. I'm like standing behind, like ready to jump in. Yeah. Like pulls us apart. And he's like, it turns out this dude is the ex-boyfriend of her neighbor. And he just apparently the neighbor had said to him that he could stay in her apartment that evening while she was gone, but he couldn't get in. So he was trying to get our attention to let him in. And my girlfriend is like, calls the friend or calls the neighbor. She's like, yeah, no, it's true. Go ahead and let him in. And it's like, okay. And so she goes to let him in and I'm just like sitting by the door waiting for her to come back. And thankfully the story did not have a scary ending. It was, she basically just let him in and he launched into his life story just unprompted.
He's not in a good place.
No, he's not doing well. He's not doing okay at all.
Because that's not the right way to ask to be let in.
Not at all. So I ended up staying more days with her just in case he came back. Because it was like, nah, he may have been benevolent this time, but we didn't plan this.
We don't got a lot of trust in how this is going to go. Wow. Well, I'm glad it didn't have a scarier conclusion. But also good on you for being at the ready. You know, you just have to be prepared.
Yep.
You got to, especially when you're talking about horror movies and such.
I was going to say, seems like you're quite a big scary movie fan.
Yes, I was not really allowed to watch horror movies growing up, but then right around the time I left the house, from the ages of like 18 to 20, I like jumped feet first into the horror genre, watched as many classics as I could get my hands on. And to this day, yeah, I would say it's one of my favorite genres. I would say as of now, I really, really enjoy a good old horror movie. It was a pleasure to go through the list of movies that you guys had sent me just to be like, oh, it's such a good movie. Oh, that's a great movie, too. Oh, there's so many awesome movies on here.
As a kid, when you weren't allowed to watch them, like, I mean, it sounds like right away you were like not too scared and ready to just watch. Like, was there one that truly traumatized you as a kid or just never even got close?
No, I grew up in a very conservative Christian household, so I wasn't even allowed to celebrate Halloween. So all of those things had like a strong association with the demonic for me. And what happened was in my teens, I got really big into just movies in general and watching classic movies. And so when I graduated, I was like, well, I mean, a lot of horror movies are considered amongst the best movies ever made. You got your Exorcists, your Rosemary's Babies, your Omens and so forth. So I jumped in and that was really where I picked up, was mainly watching those. And then I kind of expanded to watching like the 2010s had like a murderer's row of like really good indie horror movies. Like you have like The Babadook and It Follows and The Witch and Don't Breathe and a bunch of other ones just coming out one after the other. And I was like, oh, yes, feed me. That's what has led me to where I am today, I think, in terms of how I engage with horror.
I love that.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's talk about this movie.
So you found it on an AV Club list.
I watched it with my buddy Scott. Shout out to Scott, who also has a movie podcast called Shoot the Flick.
Hey Scott.
we watched it in my dorm room just on a lark to be like, let's see if this is good. We both really enjoyed it. We were like on the edge of our seats, but especially by the end we were like, whoa, that was wild. I've since shown it to other people and have had really mixed results. Some people are like, that movie was great, and other people are like, that was stupid. I was just waiting for them all to die. Why didn't they all die right away? And yeah, it's definitely a slow burn. It's definitely not for everybody. But I maintain that there's a lot to love about this movie, or at least a lot to respect.
I enjoyed it and I found it like thoroughly creepy. Like I was creeped out afterwards, which doesn't always happen with horror movies for me. I'm pretty easily able to shake off
away
and feel fine. And this one stuck with me a bit. It builds a lot of atmosphere and like the tone and look of it all just kind of sticks with you, which is good, which is nice. I like it.
Yeah. This movie is big on the atmosphere. Yes, that's really what, for most of the movie, that's what it's banking on, is just the atmosphere, I think.
Ooh, that's what's like hardest to watch for me. If the whole time it's just like, don't you feel gross? Isn't this freaky? I'm like, yeah, it is. I don't want to be here. I'd never even heard of this movie. I know nothing about it other than Sammy's got a background on her Zoom right now that looks awful. And so I know I don't like that, but I know nothing about this movie. Oh, and the guy from CSI Miami's in it. Now I know that.
Yeah, good old Horatio Caine from CSI Miami. David Caruso is in it. I love the idea that, like, as you're watching an atmospheric horror movie, Emily, that, like, the director is sitting there like, huh? It's creepy, right? It's creepy. It's real, real uncomfortable, real spooky. That is absolutely this movie. It's also very similar to The Shining. I don't know if you found that, Sammy, but I found that there's like a lot of Shining influence on it.
Yeah, I could for sure see that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I will tell you that it has a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes, 58 on Metacritic, 6.4 on IMDb. The budget, $1.5 million. It made $1.6 million. Hell
okay.
Yeah.
And we'll call that a success.
Profit.
We're going to call that a little bit of profit.
Falling across the finish line of profit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The movie takes place in an abandoned mental hospital, and Brad Anderson, the director, wrote the script based on this exact abandoned mental hospital because he used to drive by it all the time. Danvers State Hospital. So this was the inspiration for the film.
Where is Danvers?
Oh,
it's new. I think it's on the East Coast. Let me check.
Because one of my other pieces of trivia is that it is one location of the Salem witch trials.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's in Massachusetts. Yes. Yeah.
Massachusetts is a creepy place.
It is a good
one of the creepier
setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is easily one of the creepiest places in Massachusetts. This hospital looks like if Arkham Asylum, like every nightmare version of Arkham Asylum from Batman, got made real.
Ew.
And it is an apartment building now.
No!
And it is I get that in one sense of it's a really like incredible looking building, but wouldn't you be so scared to live there?
I would be so scared. Imagine being filled with people like Henley who just straight up don't believe in ghosts and are like, there's no way this, who cares, you know? But no, I wouldn't be able to do it.
No.
But I also feel like that's like the entire state of Massachusetts. It was haunted, right? Like it's all haunted.
That's true.
So
I guess if you've been living in Massachusetts long enough, you're used to it.
Thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've accepted that at any point you could be dragged into another realm by some malevolent force.
That's right. But you won't be shocked to hear that some spooky things happened on set. This one just I don't even know what to say about it. Actor Peter Mullen said reported strange happenings on the set. He claims that while filming on the roof, a voice in his head told him to jump off to see what would happen. He said the building brought out a morbid kind of overactive curiosity. I don't like that.
I don't like that. That's like scarier than a ghost because it's like the building was just like, hey, you want to fuck shit up?
Yeah.
You want to do something bad?
Yeah, yikes. That's like, and honestly, that fits with the theme of the movie, too.
I was
going
to say, it's like very in line with, the movie.
Like, he's standing up there and he just hears, do it, Peter.
Do it. Don't you want to see what happened?
Shall we watch this trailer?
All right,
yes.
Let's do it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love, what is this 2001 trailer going to look like?
Mm-hmm. The movie looks very 2001. I'll say that.
That's fun.
And I gotta get construction crews in here by Columbus Day, so you got a guesstimate how long?
I've got four really good guys. 1 week, we're gone. That's fast. I need the job.
So the loonies are outside in the real world, and here we are with the keys to the loony bin, boys.
You might actually want to be grateful, and you're about to make some decent money.
What's the catch?
Patricia Willard scandal, 1984.
I want you to try to remember what happened 24 years ago.
Use your imagination.
The shrinks figured that with these new techniques they designed, they could release hidden memories.
You can hear me.
You okay?
I want to go home.
I wouldn't tell anybody about this. If they find out about Hank, they're gonna find out about the others.
Quit at the others.
I want to come home. I am so sorry.
Good trailer, because I know nothing about this movie still, but it looks creepy.
Yeah, that was a better trailer than I was expecting.
Yeah, that's a good trailer. And that, ew, it looks so gross in there.
It really is a nasty building. And it's very cool that they were able to film in there, because what a great location for a horror movie. If I drove by there every day like the director did, I would want to make a horror movie in there, too.
Yeah. Apparently, David Caruso said they basically didn't even dress the sets half the time. Oh, they just walked into the room. And it was already terrifying. And they're like, cool, let's shoot here.
Great.
Yeah. Also, this is a guy from Sweet Home Alabama, a great film.
Josh Lucas,
yes. So I just enjoy picturing that while you tell me about a very different kind of movie.
Yeah, just go to your safe space, Sweet Home Alabama, whenever anything gets rough.
You know what happens when lightning hits sand? I'll just be thinking about that.
Perfect.
Oh boy, freaky, gross, creepy. Oh, and I don't like that at the end. It's very upsetting in a horror movie when someone sounds so distressed, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to be like we've talked about, like, ugh, I hate to bring up fucking Terrifiers again, but the Terrifier movies, but like he's having fun, you know? None of these people sound like they're having fun, and that's tough. They're like suffering, and I don't like that.
Yeah. I feel like most of this movie, is, as you'll hear in a minute, is built on just the conversations between these dudes. Mm-hmm. It's just guys having conversations as people in a really scary place. Ooh. And you get the sense that there's weird stuff going on that nobody is really aware of or acknowledging.
Yeah.
For most of the movie.
I think it's like 45 minutes in the movie when the first scary, traditionally scary thing happens. It's like all just kind of building up these characters and this setting. And
it is the definition of a slow burn. Not a long movie, but definitely a very slow burn.
Yep. Ooh, I can't wait to hear about it. That trailer really did intrigue me. That was a great.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-day blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the U.S., and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no-charge, no-obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/2scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/2scary. One last time, that's the number 3-DAY blinds.com/2scary.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Trailer.
Okay, yeah, let's get into recapping this movie. Let's do it.
Yeah, I'm excited.
All right.
Okay, Jeremy, you want to take it away and I can help as needed, or would
much
you?
Like I jumped into the horror genre, I will jump in feet first with this
love
recap.
It. And love then this attitude.
As soon as I run out of steam, I will throw my hands up in the air and beg for you to come save me.
I'll come save you. Perfect.
So I think it's worth mentioning that the opening shot of this movie is just you can't really tell what it is, but it's just weird sounds and just a hallway. But you can't even tell it's a hallway because what it actually is a shot of a creepy chair upside down. It's like it's a shot of like a really creepy hallway with a chair at the end of it inside of the asylum, as we mm-hmm. later learn, mm-hmm. upside down. And then the image, like, I think it slowly flips and mm-hmm. then we hop from that into a car with our two main characters. Our main character, played by Peter Mullen, Gordon, and then his best buddy and business partner, Phil, played by David Caruso. And it's like this sort of like a fade in. You can tell that that Gordon's like not really all there. He's exhausted. His wife and him just had a baby and the baby's been crying a lot. She has an ear infection. It's like, okay, so this dude, he's exhausted. He's fraying at the edges. And then it turns out that Phil and Gordon are business partners. They own an asbestos abatement company and they have come to this asylum to basically see it and give the guy a quote, an appraisal, and be like, this is how long we can do this, is how quickly we can do the job, this is how much it's going to cost. And we get some background about the asylum itself. They're walking around, we see just how incredibly creepy this place is. It is the scariest place on earth.
It's funny because they were giving so much detail about the asylum that I kept thinking like these things are going to come back. They're like, oh, this is like the bath where they would do ice, like cold therapy with the patients. And I'm like, okay, that's going to, none of it comes back. It's like, they just had this building and they're like, isn't this shit creepy and weird? And it is.
Yeah, like, why would we leave any of this out?
Yeah, that is actually a criticism that I've seen of the movie in some places where people were like, I thought that they were going to integrate more of like the asylum into the plot.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, no, they're just showing us. And I mean, it is creepy. So I get it. I mean,
yeah, it is. It's basically introducing a character. Like the other major character is the asylum itself. And they're just letting you know
that the
asylum, this character, real scary. Just keep that in mind. We see like weird sections, like you mentioned, Sammy, where they're like, this is where they did the electroshock therapy. This is where they did that. And eventually they get to the creepy chair that we saw before. And there's like a moment where like Gordon stares at the chair and he hears like a voice speak to him for a moment. And then like it cuts away and then it's like, all right, how long is it going to take you guys? And right before this, we understand that apparently the business is hurting like a lot. They need this like a chorus line, God, I hope I get it, I really need this job sort of moment. Gordon is absolutely doing the full choreography internally at this moment. And he basically promises to clean the entire place in a week. And this asylum is like
hundreds of rooms. It's so big. They said there were 2,000, like 2,400 patients there at one time. It's so big. I'm like, we'll do it in a week. It's like, what? And to be fair, Phil gives him this look like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, that's way too fast. But they really want this job, so.
Yeah, so he promises like doing it at just an absurd rate. And I think from there, the next notable thing, there's a lot of this movie is just like really short clips that you don't really understand.
I'll say for like the whole first act of the movie, I was confused by the filmmaking style. It's like not what you would normally see. Yes, there's like scenes that just end in very weird ways. And also I was like thrown by David Caruso's voice. His voice feels like he just sounds like such a voice actor. He has like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just a crisp perfect voice, and every time he was speaking, I was just like so thrown by it. Kind of doesn't like match.
God, the clarity of that voice.
Describe it.
But no, I know what you mean.
He must do voice acting as well. It's just like the perfect voice. He's got the perfect voice.
It feels like he came back from like being a radio announcer.
Yes.
In like the in like the 1950s or something, where you need all this clarity of diction and specificity, whereas everybody else is a lot more like natural in their delivery. He's like, I think his performance still works,
but
his,
I think so,
it
too.
Definitely is. It's pitched differently than like
interesting.
Than,
okay.
Yeah. Peter Mullen
is Scottish, and I was like trying to figure out if he was trying to do an American accent at first. He's not. He's doing his regular Scottish accent, but there were just certain words I'm like, is he trying to do an American accent? And so I don't know, this just to say, this added to my confusion in the beginning of the film. My settling into the film was a little bumpy, I guess.
Yeah. And then there's the mysterious other voice that keeps showing up in all of like these weird little clip moments. And the first one we get is Gordon sitting outside of his house. His dog's barking. His wife's out front with their little baby. He makes eye contact with her. It's kind of gloomy. And then like they go inside and it looks like he's about to go inside. And then I think there's like, it's just like, wah! And then we're back. It worked the next day.
He has roses in his hand. And as he's getting out of the car, we hear voiceover, presumably his wife saying, "Roses? They're lovely. What's the occasion, Gordon?" And it's this really weird disembodied voice. And then then there's a weird noise and it cuts to black. It's very bizarre and intentionally so. But it was really throwing me. Like, what the fuck is going on at this point?
Yeah. And then I think after that is when we get the first of our The Shining title cards. This movie takes place over a week. And every similar to The Shining, cool. where they'll be like Tuesday. Except in this movie, I'm glad they don't accompany it with scare chords. Because something just being like Tuesday works a lot better for me than just being like, it's Tuesday. Like trying to make that the scariest thing in the world.
Freak out.
And they're just doing the job. We get to meet the rest of the dudes on the job. We meet Michael, who used to be, I think he went to college to be a lawyer for like a year and then dropped out. We meet Hank, who's just a douche, who is dating Phil's, I think, ex-girlfriend.
Yes, it's like Phil's girlfriend left him for Hank, but we're introduced to him by him saying to Phil, "Your girlfriend says hi," and I thought it was just the kind of thing that you like say to be an asshole. And it's like, oh no, he actually did steal his girlfriend.
He is an asshole.
Steal his girlfriend. Also, I learned Hank is short for Henry because Phil calls him Henry. I didn't know that. I didn't know that that was
one of the surprising nicknames. Yeah.
Yep. I was like, why is he calling him Henry?
Hank seems like it can be its own name. It's weird that I don't know how you get from Henry to Hank.
I don't know. It's like Jack and John.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
I bet it is its own name sometimes. Because you know some people just are named Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sure at this point some people just are named Henry. I mean, Hank. Not Henry. You get it.
They gotta be.
Nicknames are rude.
There's gotta be Hanks out there that are just Hanks.
Just Hanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love the idea though that Henry came second and that like before Henry the Eighth, like Henry was the nickname of like Hank the Eighth.
Hank the Fourth.
There've been like seven
Hanks. Hank.
So I guess we also meet Jeff, who is a doofus with a mullet, who is Gordon's nephew. He's never worked in this before. Gordon basically brought him on to try and have an extra body there to get stuff done because they have so much work to do. And I think this is something that it really drove home to me, or really like showed up for me as I was watching it most recently, which is that despite the urgency of the situation, there's very little urgency to the individual scenes.
It's true.
Huh.
They're just sort of chatting. Like they're doing work, but you don't see people like, all right, cool, gotta move it. Like
We only have a week.
Yeah. They'll have moments where a guy will walk into a scene and be like, guys, pick it up. We only got a week and leave. But the whole scene has just been guys like, all right, here we go. Another day, another dollar.
Turning stuff on
at a very normal pace.
I'll just say I feel like it's worth mentioning that we see that Gordon is limping. He says he thinks he pulled something.
Very true.
So we see Phil is getting, he's like pretty quickly trying to bring in another guy for the job and wanting to have like a additional person there. He keeps mentioning Craig
and get rid of Hank. He wants to swap out Hank for Craig.
Oh, right. Because he hates Hank.
Yeah.
Fair.
There is a scene in which the one of the machines they're using loses power. And so Mike tells Jeff to go check the breaker. And he says, I can't. I have nyctophobia, which means he's scared of the dark. And so Mike goes down, and in the breaker room, he finds an evidence box.
This is like one of the key elements, I feel like, for the rest of the movie, in fact. It has, among other things, recordings of sessions. And that's where we get the title. Yep. He starts from session one.
I was like very excited to see that. You know, when you love, you're like, ooh, the title, like, the title.
Here it is!
Yep.
Yeah, it's these sessions with this young woman named Mary Hobbs. She was a patient at the asylum, and her doctor is talking to her. And over the course of these conversations, we discover that Mary is here because of some kind of an incident that occurred when she was a child. She's now an adult, but either prior to or after, as a result of that incident, she has developed dissociative identity disorder. And we understand this because partway through it, she starts to get stressed as the doctor's trying to ask her about the event, whatever it was. And she's like, I don't remember. And she starts, starts kind of moaning. And the doctor's like, the patient is now pulling at her mouth. And then Mary starts speaking again, but it doesn't sound like Mary. It sounds like a little girl named Princess. And the first altar has emerged. And I gotta take off. If I was wearing a hat, I'd absolutely take it off for the voice actress who plays all of the different personalities. She does a great job with her performance in this. Because it literally doesn't sound like the same person.
One person that's doing all four?
Yeah, yeah. It's wow. They did put effects on yes. Simon. Yeah, but it is the same person performing it all.
Cool. Wow, yeah. Impressive.
And Princess is like a little girl. She's happy-go-lucky, just innocent, like, yay, here I am. And then there's two other personalities that we hear mentioned. One of them is Peter. And she seems to be like, feel positively about Peter, but I think he's asleep as she's talking. That's why we aren't talking to Peter.
Peter is her real-life brother.
Oh, you're right. You're right. And Peter was her real-life brother.
And Billy. Is the boy.
Yes, thank you. Billy is the boy that another altar who lives there. And then Simon is the other one. And every time they mention Simon, there's like this chill that travels through the conversation where it's like,
they all seem scared of him.
Yeah, yeah. Simon's the scary one. Billy is apparently friendly and benevolent. But that's as that's happening, because that's like the first conversation. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it at the end of the first day that Hank finds the coins, or is that day two?
I think
it's day two, isn't it?
It's the next day. But that's basically all that to our earlier point of them not working that fast. Mike spends a lot of time listening to these tapes.
Yes.
So that night we see again just a brief shot of Gordon parked outside of his house. The tone is very weird. It's raining and he's looking at the house and music is playing. We don't know what is going on in this scene. And then he looks down and on his leg, there's like a wet spot. And he reaches to touch it and screams out in pain. And again, we cut to black. And then now we're back at the hospital the next day. And this is where Hank finds some coins.
Yeah. Hank was going down into the bowels of this place, which are somehow creepier than the upper levels.
It gets creepier the further you get from the center. So you go down, creepy. You go up too high, creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. That is exactly what happens in this movie.
You got to stay at the center, man. That's just the rule.
The eye of the hurricane, the only safe spot, the eye of the asylum. But he finds a little coin, an antique coin from the 1800s down there. And he's like, whoa. And he he's like, there must be more of these down here. And he goes and like starts looking and finds a little open spot on a wall, pulls out a brick, and just a pile of coins, like hundreds of coins come pouring out, along with teeth and a ring.
Oh, no.
And yeah. And he's like, oh, man, I got to come back later for these. The camera, meanwhile, reveals that this is from the crematorium. On the other side of the wall is the crematorium.
Yep.
And so these all belonged to patients who perished. So that we cut back to a later session. And this time, Billy emerges. She starts grabbing. I think she starts rubbing at her eyes. Mary's rubbing at her eyes on the recording. And then Billy comes out. And Billy sounds sort of like this. He's a real plucky sort of youngster little boy. He was a member of the Hardy Boys. That's like that's the vibe he gives. And he's like protective as well. He's the one who's like, I'm here to try and help keep things safe. You know, I'm the only one who can protect us from the bad stuff. And he's talking about, he explains actually that Princess in fact lives in the mouth because she's always talking, and that Billy lives in the eyes. I think because he sees everything. Is that why?
Because
he's always essentially because he's watching over. And there, then we don't know where Simon lives. They don't say where Simon lives at this point. We just know that Simon is there. And Simon also apparently knows what happened in that incident. Billy and apparently Simon both know. And Billy does not feel comfortable saying whatever that incident was. But I think it's on this day that as Mike is like looking through the stuff that he'd found, he finds Mary's actual file. And so he sees a picture of Mary as an adult, some family photos of her as a child, as well as what appear to be like intake photos when they brought her in, or at least at some point they took a photo. It's of her like with her hands over her chest, but you can see scars that look like a lot of like cut marks or something on her chest. But it's not clear where those came from exactly. What else happens? It's so hard. Oh, is this when we have the lobotomy conversation?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah, on a lunch break.
Yeah, our second big lunch break conversation. I even forgot the first one. The first one is when they talk about Patricia, was it?
Yes.
The young woman who they were talking about how these places, why all these asylums closed in the late 80s. And it was a combination of budget cuts, but also apparently there was a scandal where, at least in this, I think in this asylum in particular, there was allegedly a patient who claimed that she had been basically as a child forced to participate in all sorts of like satanic sexual rituals involving her family for years and years. And he was going into detail about it. To the point where even
it's upsetting.
Gordon is like, bro, stop.
Stop.
This is too much. This is some grotesque stuff he's describing. And apparently what happened was it was all set to go to court. And then it was revealed that it was some kind of like a false memory or something that she had created. Either it had been uncovered through like hypnotherapy or something, but that it had never even happened. And that she was actually a virgin. And that not like it was all fake. And I guess that caused such a scandal that it helped bring about the end of this asylum. And I believe that's based on like a lot of the satanic panic stuff from the 80s where people would be like, I was hypnotized and now I remember all of this wild abuse that happened to me by Satanists when I was a kid. And a number of those I think were found to have been false. So I think that's where they took that from.
Yep.
But this day, I believe, is when we get the, as you said, Sammy, the lobotomy conversation, which is essentially just Mike, who is annoyed at Jeff for just being a doofus. He grabs Jeff and holds like a chopstick up to his eye and basically describes the procedure for lobotomy, which is you insert usually like a pick in through the orbital lobe, like through or orbital socket, essentially next to the eye, push it through and then push it up a couple of times to sever the front part of the brain. And it's like the whole scene is just like, that is one of the moments in the movie where I feel like if that was a real conversation, somebody would have stepped in sooner.
No, we don't care. It's fine.
you can't mime lobotomizing your coworker and have everybody else just be like, yeah, this is fine.
Nope.
The ending of the monologue is great because he's like, what does he say? The most notable side effect, black eye, recommended prescription, sunglasses. Yeah, which is important. That'll come up later.
Yep. There's also this day, there's some mention of seeing some cracks in Gordon, like the new baby is taking, like he's not getting enough sleep, and he's they've never seen him lose his composure before, but they're starting to see some cracks is what Hank says. And we see Gordon calling his wife, like away from the other guys. He like goes into a room and calls his wife, and he like doesn't look great, and he just looks like very stressed out, and he says, can we talk, like we need to talk about it. And we don't hear any of the conversation, but as he's standing at this window, he looks outside and he sees Phil talking to two guys that he doesn't recognize, and he looks confused and suspicious about whatever conversation is happening over there. And we're not entirely sure why, but the vibe is weird. We're on edge.
Yeah. It's this whole movie is just weird, like slightly off things. And it's like, huh, what's the deal with that? And the movie goes, exactly. And sort of like wouldn't floats like away. Exactly. So I guess the next big scene, which is the first overtly scary, like traditionally scary scene, is that Hank comes, he sneaks back in. Now these guys are supposed to, once the lights go down, once it's dark, Gordon has made it very clear he does not want anybody here after dark. So Hank basically has to sneak back into the asylum to go and collect these coins. And while he's down there, finally looking at the teeth, looking at the rings and getting all the coins, putting them in a bag, he's got like his jazz playing on his CD player.
He's wearing fucking headphones, blasting music in an abandoned mental hospital. It's just I just couldn't believe it. It's shocking. Yeah. A shocking choice.
Absolutely not.
But to be fair, it seems like he still can kind of hear everything. He does hear noises behind him. And so I guess he's playing it low enough.
Headphone technology had only gotten so far in 2001.
Yeah, they weren't in-ear headphones. They were just like the fuzzy
over-ear. That's right. Yeah, you can hear stuff.
Exactly. He hears the noise, goes and investigates. And like as we're, you know, we're sitting here on the edge of our seats, and then like a silhouette appears at the end of the hall that he's so shining his light. He's like, oh no! He takes off. It's, thank goodness, as he's running, I think he stumbles upon something and it's like, oh no, it's caught up to him, and then it's just a bird, like a pigeon had flown in here at night, and he's like, oh, thank goodness. Oh. And then we get that that Evil Dead style camera movement that's like, no, 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 and something moving around the corner towards him, and he's like, ah! And that's the end of the scene. Cuts to black. So something appears to have befallen Hank, and that becomes even more evident when Hank does not show up the next day. And everybody's like, where's Hank? Of course, our boy Phil is immediately like, see, I told you.
Fuck Hank.
Yep. He goes and calls. Exactly. I told you this guy was awful. We should have gotten rid of him already. He goes to call his ex-girlfriend to check in on what happened to Hank. And over the course of the conversation, apparently it turns out that Hank came home late last night, took all of his stuff, packed up and left.
Said he found his golden ticket.
Yes.
And that he bolted to Miami to go to casino school.
Casino school?
A very strange sentence. But it's, I guess that he like thought he had hit it rich with those coins. And I guess they probably are worth money. They're like old coins, but it didn't look, you know, like...
And how's casino school going to help him?
Casino school really threw me. What is casino school?
Is casino school to make a casino?
I think so.
Dealer? No, to build a casino, you go to casino school.
Or something. Like, I think the idea is that the coins are seed money, and he's going to, like, start his own casino now.
Sure. Well, we need a school for people like that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Casino school. Anybody that's been to casino school, let us know what it was like.
It's definitely in Florida.
Did you have to take an entrance exam? And like what was on it? What do you major in at casino school?
Yeah, are there different paths?
Yeah, exactly. I have like a minor in blackjack.
Gordon is like being weird. He's staring at this kind of gazebo-ish thing, not quite a gazebo, but gazebo adjacent. Okay. And he's feeling weird. He's feeling very unsettled by Hank not being there. And he's saying something's not right here. And Phil is looking at him suspiciously, like, what are you talking about? And then he looks at Phil and says, who are the two guys you were talking to yesterday? And it gets kind of heated between them. It's like confrontational. He's like, who were those guys? And Phil is like, what the fuck? Like, what are you talking about? And he tries to walk away and he says, don't you walk away from me. And he like grabs him and he's like screaming at him, and it's this like fight that they have, and I can't remember. I think they like walk away and someone says like, oh man, fatherhood is really screwing with his mind, or like he's really
that's what it is.
He's really not doing well. And we see Gordon goes down to the graveyard that's at the mental hospital, of course, and he calls his wife again and he says, can you forgive me? Yeah, he's just really looking like he's not doing well. And we see Mike again listening to some tapes, still asking, where is Simon? They're saying, we don't. Billy is saying he doesn't want to tell Mary what happened. The doctor is saying, like, you can help Mary by telling her what happened. And he says, Mary's a nice girl. Mary's a nice girl. She doesn't need to know those kinds of things. And he's like, okay, well, Simon can tell me what happened, right? Can you get Simon? He's too scared to wake up Simon. And then Gordon and Phil sit down together.
Yeah.
At the end of the
Gordon,
day.
Yeah, I think Gordon, recognizing that he can't keep acting like this, basically decides to level with his buddy. And he's like, look, on the first night after we had landed the job, I went home to try and celebrate with my wife, and I walked over to her and she turned around and accidentally spilled some boiling water all over my leg. Like, it was a complete accident jumble where I'm trying to embrace her, suddenly my leg's on fire and I hit her. And it's like, oh, no. And Phil's like, oh, whoa, that's not good. And he's like, yeah, I feel so bad. Like, I can't even go home. I'm torn up about it because it was like a reflex. I don't even know. I don't know what came over me. But I'm trying to make up for it. And, you know, I'm sorry to have brought that to you. And I think with him exposing that, Phil feels comfortable enough to be like, look, those guys are guys who like to, there's just some kids who like to come here and graffiti and do stuff like that. So I paid those guys to make sure that nobody breaks in here while we are working, just to keep them out of our way. No more graffiti, nothing that could mess up with our work. And so I'm trying to look out for us all. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. They've leveled.
Need to talk to each other. Everybody just needs to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. They've talked it out. Everybody's feeling better. I think. At some point, I don't remember when it's revealed, but I think I don't think it's a huge spoiler, but that essentially the grave that Gordon was sitting above as he called his wife was actually Mary's grave.
Yep.
Mary is buried in that cemetery and he was calling his wife from her gravesite. Mm-hmm. Seemingly by coincidence, like he doesn't look down at it. He's just kind of chilling. Right. And is there anything else big that happens that day, or do we go to the dream then after that?
Dream sequence.
Yeah, which is like a weird dream sequence where I think we hear like snippets of dialogue from throughout the movie up to this point. We see like it's not even clear if it is a dream at first, but it's like a shot of like Gordon standing there in his full suit, his full like asbestos abatement suit.
Like a hazmat suit type thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then is this the first do it, Gordon, that we get? Yeah, we hear it's like as the sound effects are building in the weirdness, and I think we hear like Wendy's voice again, like,
and
oh,
we're seeing
home,
the pot
roses.
Of water boiling on the stove.
Mm-hmm. And we're watching him go into the house again with all like the peanut butter and the roses and everything. And that's where we hear the do it, Gordon.
Do it,
and then
Gordon.
Suddenly. Yeah, his hazmat suit is covered in blood, and there's a stock scream that Wendy gives out that is a sound effect that I recognize from numerous YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. She gives out a scream and this splatter, and it's like, ah, and then we see that Gordon dreamed this sitting in the, I guess, parking lot of the asylum in the company van, just sleeping on site. And he's not doing well. He like looks down at his leg, and remember that wet spot. Now I think his leg is completely bare, and we see what looks like a nasty like burn on it.
It needs immediate medical attention. It's a horrible third. His skin is covered in blisters. It's so bad.
Ew.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is something that left untreated, it not only would scar, but could get a lot worse. And he pours like some ointment on it. But look at it. It's like, buddy,
it needs so much more than that.
Yeah, this ain't gonna cut it.
Yeah. So I think the next day is, am I correct in thinking that Craig is supposed to arrive at some point on the following day?
Phil has called Craig. Yes, I think, I don't know if it's this day or the next day, but but yes, Craig is coming at some point. We know that he's going to be helping out. We see during Phil and Gordon's conversation, Gordon asked Phil not to tell anybody about what he confided in him about. And the next day Phil walks right up to Mike and he's like, Gordon's becoming a liability, he hit his wife. Like, he just,
oh my god,
so crazy. He's just, it's,
he even pulls him away from the work in the most suspicious way. He's like, we need to talk, like, we're in the middle of like, I have to go downstairs and do this. We have to talk now. And like, just leaves Jeff there to go fix the problem as they go and conspire over what's happening with Gordon.
I just couldn't believe it.
And he immediately comes in so hard with like, he's a liability.
He's a liability.
Oh, we got to get rid of him. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Did you know he hit his wife? He hit his wife.
Literally like that. He says it just like that.
And we see that Gordon is within earshot hearing this.
And
he slowly approaches them and they very quickly change their tune. They say, we were just talking about Jeff and how he's doing here. And Gordon.
We were talking about somebody else.
Yeah. After like a 15-second pause, it feels.
Yeah.
Like he walks up. They stop talking
awkward.
And stare for a long time. Yeah.
And they all are pretty sure that everybody's heard everything, but we're all going to act like it's fine. And hey, yep. All right, I guess back to work for us.
It's so blatantly like when they're like, we were talking about your nephew. We're staring at him. It's so awkward.
And then we see Jeff is in a different part of the building and he sees Hank up on the floor above him. He spots him like looking out a window.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's like looking up at him, he's still got his headphones on. He's not dressed for work. He's just standing there and he's like, what are you doing here? As Jeff is just staring at him, as he's like wearing sunglasses, just gazing out the window, and he's like, and immediately runs, grabs everybody else.
Because he also like puts his hand on the window and there's some blood. So Jeff is like, something's not right here. This is,
I mean, he's certainly not in Miami at casino school.
He's not
exactly.
He's right here.
School did not go well.
He's right here.
Beat a hasty retreat. He runs and grabs the rest of the group. And this is where it feels like things really have started to kick off in the movie at this point. Because it's like, okay, now we have explicit mysteries. What is happening? The group is falling apart. They run to the spot where Hank allegedly was. He's not there, but the coin he had was still there.
And Phil is, as they're like walking over there, Phil is being aggressively weird about it. Like being like, he can't be here. He's at casino school. Amy said he's at casino school. And like, you all heard her say that. And Gordon's shifty eyes, like he's like, we didn't hear her say that. Like, you were on the phone with her. We see that Gordon is suspicious of this, and he's like, let me see your phone. Or like, it's weird. It's this like vibe of they're all not trusting each other now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of that confrontation, you hear footsteps running in an upper level, and they're all like, huh? And now we're like, oh no. Jeff's like, it's Hank. They're like, okay, we gotta figure out, let's split up. Gordon's like, Mike and Jeff, you go over here. Phil, you're coming with me. And he turns, and then we hear the most, in my opinion, the single most memorable moment of the entire film, from off screen. We hear, hey, and he turns, and we have the most dramatic zoom I've ever seen as Phil points and furiously says, fuck you.
It's really funny. It like really stood out to me as just this very comedic moment. That is perfect, and I'm so happy that it's in here. It's great. Hey, yes. Hey, fuck you. So good.
Every single, as I said, there's a couple of moments that that's hit for moment. Everybody. That one, every single group I've watched it with has mm-hmm. fallen out. When my friend watched that for the first time, we were like on the edge of our seats, and that made us laugh so hard. Yeah, the movie has built so much to this, and we fell out of our chairs laughing. God, like we had good. To stop the movie for a while.
Yeah, it really took you out of it.
Yeah, it is. It's so popular that like I think the video of this on YouTube has over a million views of just him going, hey, fuck you.
I'm gonna look at it.
Yeah, you should.
You gotta watch that.
If you watch any bit of this movie, it should be that one moment. Yeah, that, and the, also the shot of Gordon's face. He looks so horrified in response to Phil.
Just that's like, very funny. Scandalized.
Excuse you.
And I think at that point, they all split up.
Yep.
They like all start going to different spots.
In big, scary, abandoned buildings.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. So Gordon runs upstairs to investigate the noise. Phil runs into the basement. I think Jeff goes to a different part of the basement. And of course, Mike, when tensions are at their highest, runs back and starts listening to the tapes again.
That's I will say those are the funny, because it's just like purely for plot reasons, so that's how they can structure this moment. But it's just so funny to imagine him being like, I gotta go listen to the tapes right now.
Yeah,
he's visibly shaking as he turns the tape on, no less. Like he's terrified, so scared, it's so tense. He's like, I just gotta hear more.
I gotta get the tape.
Listen to more of these comforting video tapes.
It's also like Mike's character doesn't seem to be at all trying to solve any mystery. Like, it's not like he's the one that's suspecting something is going on. So it really doesn't make that much sense for him to be so dedicated to listening to these tapes. But yeah, we need somebody to listen to them. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I almost wish that they had started playing on their own, but maybe that would have been too overtly supernatural.
Right.
But he plays, I believe this tape he plays is session 9. Yep. He's gotten all the way up to session 9. And once again, we hear the psychiatrist asking to talk to Simon. I think it's Billy again, refusing to get him. The psychiatrist keeps pushing. Billy's like almost in tears. Meanwhile, as this is happening, Gordon is looking deeper and deeper upstairs, like through the labyrinth of this asylum. You see that Jeff has gone into the hallway that you see on Sammy's screen, the hallway, which is this weird tunnel that is filled with looks like hazmat suits, but they're like in one piece. So you see just all these hands, and it feels like such a setup for a horror scene, because anyone can be in one of those suits, and you would not see them. And so as he's down there, the generator even is starting to go on the fritz, and the recording is becoming more and more distorted and garbled as the power gets like weaker and weaker. Phil is downstairs looking. He starts to see items of clothing down there. Like he sees a shoe, some other clothes piled up. He hears the music, the jazz, just hauntingly playing throughout the cavernous underbelly of this asylum. And finally, he happens upon Phil. Phil happens upon Hank. in his underwear, just like crouching, and he's still staring off into space, still wearing his sunglasses. And he once again is like, what are you doing here? And then the power like kicks off, like it completely turns off just as it sounds like we're about to hear from Simon. And Billy has like had a breakdown and the recording stops. All the lights start to go out. And of course, Jeff is terrified of the dark.
Oh, right. And, oh, I mean, in this moment, you're crazy if you're not scared, but that would make it worse.
Yes. And as he's down there, all the lights start to go out one by one. So it's like a wall of darkness. This just starts like coming towards him.
It's a great
he starts
shot.
Running. Yeah, it's so good.
It's in the trailer.
That's the other part that everybody likes. Yeah, it's in the. You see a glimpse of it in the trailer as he's just sprinting away, being chased by a wall of darkness, screaming and crying as it eventually catches up to him and he vanishes. There's like a shot of him later. You can hear him just like hyperventilating and sobbing. It cuts away from Phil. We don't really know what Phil does, but I feel like David Caruso's expressions are purposefully enigmatic. Mm-hmm. Like he looks very intent, but you're not sure what he's thinking. Mm-hmm. He's just like, he's got like a grim look on his face.
Yep.
And we have, I think it cuts back to Gordon, who at this point has wandered upstairs and sees the chair, the weird, creepy chair from the beginning. And he like goes in, I think near the chair and walks up past it. And there's like a room that the light is coming through and illuminating the chair. And he starts walking around this room. And we start to realize that this is Mary's room that he's in. And you can see like all these strange photos that Mary had put up in her room. There's one of, I think the one that was most memorable for me was a shot of a chimpanzee holding its dead baby. And then next to it was like a human holding either a doll or a dead baby. And there's like a headline that I forget what the headline is, but even the headline is provocative in some way. It's like they thought it wasn't real or something.
Images.
Yeah. And the other thing is we notice that there are photos, and I don't know if it's like something that you consciously realize in the moment, but we've actually seen a couple of these photos before that he's looking at. There's like photos of like a baby. And it's like, what? Wait a minute. Haven't we seen that baby? As he's like looking at the baby and as he's like up there, he gets a buzz on his he gets a buzz from his
walkie-talkie.
Yeah. And it's Phil. And he's like, Gordon, we need you, like, come back. Where are you? And he's like, oh, I'm upstairs. He's like, OK, I'll come find you. And he's like, OK. And he's like, I found Phil. Or is it, I think he does. He say he found Hank or does he
no,
does he
it's
just
like
I have to come find you?
It's strangely, as a lot of things in
calm.
This movie are, it's like not enough information is being said in these moments where he's like, OK, I'll come to you. And yeah, he sounds calmer than he should, knowing what he just saw. And so
and how freaked out he just was from the darkness.
And so a lot of this, like in this part of the movie, I'm just like, what is going on? Who can we trust? Which is what is everybody is also asking themselves.
Yeah. And as he's walking upstairs, we see he's holding a blade, like he's holding a knife. As Phil is walking towards where Gordon is, he's literally holding a knife and he's got like this real grim look on his face. And it's like, oh no, did Phil snap? Did he kill Hank just now? What is going on? I don't even know what Mike is doing at this point. I think Mike is just like
listening to those
still
tapes.
Listening to tapes.
Yeah.
Just
hoping the tapes come back on.
Yep.
And thankfully, Jeff manages to find his way outside. He is like running around the side of the asylum, tearing off his suit, like covered in sweat. He makes it back to the van, opens the van and just collapses inside. Is just sitting there breathing, trying to relax, get his heart rate under control. Meanwhile, Phil arrives up there with Gordon and he's like, I found Hank. And he's like, what? And I think it starts to get unreal again, because I don't think we really see what becomes of their interaction. But it gets like, huh?
That's right.
And then we cut. Yeah. Yeah. And then we cut outside.
At some point, the like power comes back on and the tapes do come back on. And
yes, we hear the voice of Simon for the first time. And it's this sinister voice that we realize was the same voice that we've been hearing, that do it, Gordon.
Do it, Gordon.
We hear like, hello, Doc. And like the doctor is like, hello, Simon. And they start to have a conversation. And Simon just sounds like the most villainous person.
It's a really creepy voice. It really is.
He relishes every word in like that classic British villain style. Even though he doesn't have an English accent, he sounds like Scar from The Lion King. and it's just so sinister. And he's like, the psychiatrist like, can you tell me what happened to Mary? And he's like, you know, and he's like, well, I'd like to hear it from you. And he starts to describe the events. As Simon starts to describe, we cut back out to Jeff, who gets like a buzz on his walkie talkie. It's like a voice squawks through. It's like, where are you? And you're not sure who exactly said it. And he's like, oh, hey, I'm out by the van. Please just come get me. I got trapped down there, but I'm okay. Please just come in. And they're like, okay. And you don't really know who said it or what. And then as he's sitting there, he grabs some Oreos, starts eating the Oreos. And then we have another one of those Evil Dead shots where the camera starts moving towards him unnervingly quickly. And he stands up and he's like, oh, hey, sorry, I just had some of the Oreos. And then like this camera just gets really close up to him, and then we cut away again, and the voice of Simon continues, and he's like, he starts to describe what had happened that night. He's like, what happened with Peter? What did Peter do? Peter being Mary's older brother. Yeah. And he's like, Peter was real naughty. He scared Mary and she fell onto her doll. Her China doll. It cut her up, Doc. It cut her up real bad. And it's like, as this is happening, we see another car pull in, and it's Craig. Our buddy Craig is here. And Craig is like, hey. Like, Craig is the most upbeat man in this entire film. He's like, all right.
How's everybody doing?
Yeah, like, what a mess. And he goes walking into the asylum like, hey. And he walks into, like, this room that they'd covered in plastic. And I think, that actually happens a little bit later, because he shows up as all of the weirdness is occurring. Simon continues after the doll cut her up real bad. He's like, so I told Mary to take the knife and cut up Peter real bad. And then to do it to the rest of the family. And like, we start to understand, like, oh my gosh, we understand what those scars were on Mary's chest. We understand what became of the rest of the family. And then Gordon, I think, arrives in the plastic room. This is before Craig has gotten there. Gordon arrives and he sees Hank lying on the ground, just not really moving, wearing sunglasses, just staring up into space. And he's like, huh? And then Phil is there, and Phil's like, look, man, you need to wake up. And he's like, what are you talking about? What happened to Hank? He's like, look, we are at the end of our rope here. Okay, we got to pull it together. He's like, I don't understand what's going on. He's like, wake up. And he's like, I don't, what? And Phil's just confused. Basically, the whole conversation is Gordon being confused and Phil repeatedly telling him to wake up in increasingly angry and sinister ways. And he starts to look down at him. He starts to look down at Hank, and he's like, take a good look at Hank. Phil says, take a real good look at Hank. They got to take a real close look. And Gordon's like, okay, goes down and he removes Hank's sunglasses, and there is a lobotomy pick embedded through one of Hank's eyes.
Ew.
And he's like, what? And he looks up and Phil's gone.
No.
And what's then happening? Craig comes walking in and he's like, hey, buddy, what's up? And he's like, what's that? Like, pointing at the apparent dead body lying on the ground.
It's so funny, because if you walked into a room with, it's just plastic tarp, and there's a almost naked body, dead looking body on the floor, and he makes it all the way to Gordon before he spots it. He like basically is like patting him on the back. He's like, hey, what's up? It's like you would see the body from 40 feet away.
The second you walk in,
you would have seen that down the hall. You would have been like, oh, hey, man. Oh, what's wrong? Is he okay? Like, I think it would have been one of those.
He shouldn't be on the floor, no matter what.
Yeah. Like, do you need me to call the police? Like, I feel like that would have been. But he makes it all the way down there, which means that Gordon is able to grab him. Because you hear, like, the, do it, Gordon, again. And Gordon grabs Craig and, like, puts him in a headlock, wrestles him to the ground. And Craig's like, whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? And you see, you watch as Gordon reaches over, removes the pick from Hank's head, which is such an effective effect because
it
doesn't just come out. The head comes up with it at first and he has to like pull it out. The head falls back down and then he takes it in his hand and then you hear, do it, Gordon, again. And you watch as he slowly drives this pick into Hank's or into Craig's eye. And the soundtrack is going nuts. It's like almost like a carnival.
Yes,
sound.
That's what I wrote. It's like playing? Almost arcade sounding. Yeah, it's very disorienting, and there's still like high pitched screeches.
It's
just
like so much grosser that it just came out of somebody else's head.
So
and it's
much
like,
worse.
Zips hasn't that. Been cleaned.
At least wipe it off.
Yeah, just like straight out of one eye into another. I really don't like that.
It's nasty.
It is far from sanitary, and he basically lobotomizes Craig, and Craig like stops struggling and is just kind of lying there. And then we start to see like flashback moments of Gordon killing the other members of the team. So you see like Phil confronting him. He's like, I just saw Hank. He's all messed up. He's all messed up. And he said, you did it to him. And then you see like Gordon rush at Phil and he's like, ah. And then we see Gordon as Mike, having listened to the tape, is now walking through the asylum, trying to find everybody else. Gordon comes running up partially covered in blood and just jumps him from behind. And then we see the shot of Jeff looking up, seeing Gordon, who frankly is fully covered
it's
in blood
so
at this point.
It's so funny for Jeff to not be immediately scared. Jeff's just like, hey, Gordon, like, I'm sorry, I was eating your Oreos. He's drenched in blood, like holding a knife in his hand, like walking towards him. So scary. It's so funny.
And he's walking so fast, mm-hmm. too. Like, he is power walking towards him. We see Jeff, and as each person is killed, we then see their bodies on display in this plastic tarp covered room, like in little side rooms. Ooh. So you can see
so all of those like fast shots that was Gordon coming at them.
Yeah. Ooh. And we then get even though I literally just watched the movie the other day, I cannot remember, is it a voiceover that explains or is it just that we hear it?
We hear it, don't we?
Yeah, we hear that scene from earlier. We see like Gordon watching his family getting the stuff, getting the roses, which, by the way, I realized we didn't mention. We actually glimpsed the roses in the asylum earlier with a bunch of paint over them. It's like a little side bit where like Hank is going around in there and he happens upon some roses and he's like, huh, and just like moves on
because
the camera doesn't like focus on them, right. But they're in the shot and he apparently sees them and is like, oh, that's weird, and just moves on. But we see him starting to go in and we hear his wife like, oh, hey, honey, oh, not now, I'm working with some honey, stop, wait, I'm and accidentally spills and we hear the and then we hear do it, Gordon, and he's like, ah, and we hear his wife go and we hear like the sound of him hitting his
it's
wife
really
and
upsetting then, yeah, it's yeah, you don't see anything but just the sounds. It's all you
just
need.
Know. Yeah,
yeah. And what we see is the photos of that baby that we now realize were family photos that Gordon had earlier in the film that he put up in Mary's room. And in fact, his family photos are now in the room with like bloody fingerprints on them. And we hear the sound of the confrontation between Gordon and his wife that escalates from hitting to full stabbing. And then we hear the dog barking, and then we again hear the do it, Gordon, and the dog barking gets cut off abruptly. and then we hear a baby crying,
and we
once again hear the do it, Gordon, and then then we hear Gordon yell no, and then it cuts to Gordon sitting in the van in the rain outside of his house, just staring at the house so forlornly, like heartbroken. And that's when we see like the bloody handprints all over the photos in the asylum. problem in Mary's room. And we, it cuts back to Gordon just like sitting in, I think he's like standing in the room looking at the different photos. And there's like, this one thing I haven't mentioned or that we haven't mentioned is that we see photos of Mary that grow increasingly terrifying. Like the first one is like, oh, it's a normal like woman in her 30s. Then the next one is like her from like in profile looking in the most murderous, sinister way.
Yep.
And then we get the most sinister of all. She's giving a full-on Kubrick stare at the camera. And this is like superimposed over Gordon's face as he's standing there. And the ending of the movie is the voice, Simon starts speaking again. And the doctor asks Simon, he's like, and where do you live, Simon? And Simon says, I live in the weak and the wounded, doc. And that's the end of the movie.
Oh, whoa.
There's like a very sad moment just before too of Gordon on a smashed phone, like a broken phone that clearly is not working, talking into it saying, Wendy, please don't hang up. I want to come home. I want to hold you. I want to hold my baby. Can you forgive me? It's like so, so devastating. And yeah, that's just, that's the end. Yeah.
Oh my God. So when he was telling Phil, like, I hit her, he actually had killed her and his baby. And, and yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess in retrospect, Phil was right to immediately be like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's fair.
Not so crazy for him to have been talking, but perhaps you should have, you know, left.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. And like, there's I think one of the interesting themes of the movie is the idea that something can like get inside of you and be there. Cause there's, these guys are an asbestos abatement team. And so there's a constant risk of asbestos getting into your lungs. And there's even a conversation on the first day between Hank and Jeff. Cause Jeff doesn't really know anything about this. So he walks in with a boombox and starts playing like hard rock. And Jeff's like, and Hank's like, look, the vibrations of that are going to release spores, and those spores can get into your lungs and kill you. And he starts to explain how, for all you know, some of the asbestos, he holds up a piece, some of this could have already gotten into your lungs, and you may not know for 20 years. It just attaches itself in there, and your body forms a little pearl, a protective pearl around it. And 20 years from now, that could burst, and before you know it, you're drowning in your own fluids. And it's just like, oh! And that kind of, the theme of something could be dwelling inside of you, growing inside of you.
You don't know.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
And there's a real question of like whether, I don't know what you felt, Sammy, but I felt like there's a real question of whether or not, like, is Simon just a form of mental illness, or is Simon like an entity that can that can possess people?
Right. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. I was thinking about how with Mary and with Gordon, both of them were in, like, their initial things were in moments where they were scared or like caught off. And you know, when you're like scared and you do something out of like a complete instinctual reaction, I thought that was interesting.
Like, when, like an animal, like when you like back an animal into a corner, it'll attack you, even if it's not like an aggressive.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it animal. Seems like reflex reactions that for whatever reason at like Simon's urging get taken way further.
Uh-huh. And when people are like weak and at their like he was already, like you said, like frayed at the edges, just generally.
So, yeah, I thought that was like an interesting like exploring how that moment, how it can be like literally just in a blink of an eye, you can do something so regrettable. I mean, you know, this is obviously taken to the extreme, but like that I thought was interesting.
I'd call it regrettable. I'd
call it regrettable killing your whole family.
I would hope it's regrettable.
I would regret it. Seems like he did.
Yeah. Yeah, Gordon. Ooh. Yeah, it's such... I love the performance of the actress. What is the voice actress's name? The actress who plays Mary, Simon, Billy, and Princess. Her name is Jurian Hughes.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. Damn. She does a phenomenal job. And whoever the actress they got to play the visual, like Mary in the photos, shout out to her because she is so scary. She's legitimately terrifying.
Yeah, I thought everyone was good in this movie. I like I said, it like stuck with me afterwards. Just the like devastation of him having done something so bad that... Oof, yeah. Oh, it just like sticks with you. His pain. Oof.
Yeah, Peter Mullen's anguish. Oh. He does such a good job. He's so good
in
it.
I mean, he's so good in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he really is. And David Caruso. David Caruso goes for it, man.
Crisp, clear voice. I just like absolutely piercing.
I don't know what it is about it. It's like jarring to hear a voice so crisp. I just don't know how to put it. Other than that.
It is
it just cuts right through you.
I wish someone would make a super like a cut of the hey fuck you scene where then we have the CSI Miami won't get fooled again. Yeah! And like all the shots of like shots of the asylum and stuff.
Has to be out there somewhere. Come on.
Oh
yeah, I gotta look up that clip.
Yeah, to this day I don't understand what possessed them to have him give that I've never heard somebody emphasize the you in that way, and then with such a dramatic zoom.
It's so funny.
It's so dramatic on his face.
A very interesting
from like a medium to a close-up
directing choice.
Yeah, and for everybody to be like, we got it.
That's yeah,
moving on,
we got it.
Very interesting. Ooh, this made me feel sad and bad.
I mean, that's my favorite way to feel, so I loved it.
I know you love it. I know you love it.
Love to feel sad and bad.
Mm-hmm. I think the movie, for me, and I guess thankfully for you, Sammy, really did succeed in what it was trying to do. Like, it succeeds in legitimately being, like, unnerving and scary and creepy and then just depressing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will say, upon rewatches, like subsequent rewatches, I have felt that some of the dialogue starts to feel a little weird and cheesy in spots. And I think we even highlighted some moments where it's like, wait a minute, why is he running to listen to the tapes again? And like weird.
Yeah, sort of. It feels a little contrived.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun. I don't know why it kind of works for it because it's just adds to the vibe of it in some way. I don't know. It kind of worked for me.
Yeah, I actually agree. I think it ends up being part of the movie's appeal that it's like this weird, slightly goofy, offbeat, very surprisingly effective little horror movie.
Yeah. Mm. And I think, because so many of the scenes are trying to make you feel disoriented, like part of that, it just adds to it.
Mm-hmm.
I really got to go watch Sweet Home Alabama now.
Yeah,
that's going to be the cure for me.
That and hey, fuck you.
Hey, fuck you. And then a great little, 90 minutes of Sweet Home Alabama. And I'll be set right as rain.
Yeah. As far as violence, I will say, really, other than the lobotomy sequence, really, like, the lobotomy sequence is gnarly. Yeah, no matter what. That's a gnarly scene. But the rest of it... pretty
most
chill.
Of it is not shown, like it cuts away just as the
just like imagined.
Exactly, like the audio, we're hearing violence happen but not seeing it. Not much violence on screen, but still an unsettling effective movie nonetheless.
Yeah.
Oh man,
Jeremy,
thank you
so
for bringing
much.
This to us. Wowie, wow. Really gonna unfortunately sit with me for a little bit here. But as a just a little diversion, tell our listeners about Three Black Halflings.
Yes.
And anything else you want to talk about.
Sure. Three Black Halflings is a TTRPG podcast. We talk about diversity and inclusivity in TTRPGs, tabletop role-playing games, if you're not familiar with the acronym, and general the nerd sphere in general. We also give GMing tips, player tips. We have historically focused a lot on Dungeons and Dragons, but we've recently been expanding into other systems, and we will continue to do so. I am the resident GM for the show, so most of our actual play, which is like, if you're not familiar with the genre, basically when you listen to people playing a tabletop role-playing game that is recorded, we have amazing sound editing team, So it ends up being almost like a little bit of a radio play. I've jammed those. We just finished one actually called Tales of Wagadu, The Curse of the Spider Queen. And that one, it gets a little spooky at times. Ooh. It gets a little spooky, a little emotionally fraught at times. Mm. So, you know, if you enjoyed hearing us talk about Session 9, go check that out for some spookiness. There's also a lot of heartwarming and adorable parts as well. So it's not, you get a whole gamut.
Something for
there.
Everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm also in the process of launching a couple of podcasts. We actually just started one. If you enjoy Three Black Halflings and wish to support us, we have a Patreon. And on the Patreon, I and my co-host Jasper actually just launched a new movie review show called JC's on Movies, because both of our initials are JC. And I'm actually, I don't know when this is coming out, but it's possible that by the time this is released, that I will have released the first episode of The Quantum Reactor, which is a new science fiction movie review podcast.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that I'm doing with my friend Andrew Coons from the show The First Watch. Our first episode is about Sunshine, which is a 2007, underrated, kind of little known.
We were talking about it last night.
Yeah, it's good stuff, right?
Movie. Yep.
Yeah, that movie's awesome. And so many people who became so famous later. It's wild. And actually, one of them was in the second movie that we just talked about, which is Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Perfect movie.
Yeah, we're going to release probably both of those episodes at the same time in both podcast and video form. So go check that out. You can follow Three Black Halflings at three. That's the number three Black Halflings on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at TB Halflings on Patreon. If you want to follow the Quantum Reactor, you can go to Twitter. It'll be at, I believe it's at Q Reactor. I have to check because I couldn't get Quantum Reactor, but if you type in the Quantum Reactor on Twitter, it should come up. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow at Jeremy Cobb One. That's Cobb with two B's and the number one on Twitter and Hive, just in case Twitter implodes. And also, I do have an Instagram. I have literally never remembered what it is called, nor have I ever posted anything there, but people keep finding me and following me. I'm at over 100 followers now. So if you happen to go find it, please follow me. It brings me joy. And maybe I'll eventually post something there.
Stay tuned. It's a bit of an exciting. What's it going to be?
I have some ideas, but we have to wait. I'm hoping I can get to
a lot of pressure when it's got to be the first one.
Exactly. That's partly what has kept me from posting it. I keep putting it off. I'm
Stakes
now waiting.
Get higher and higher.
Exactly. I'm trying to get to 150 followers before I post anything.
Oh, we can do that.
Yeah. I don't know what number I'm at right now, but it's over 100. So if I can hit 150, then I will post a picture.
That's motivation.
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you so much for being here. And do we have, I guess we got a couple crystal clear, gorgeous voices for you to end on, Sam, if you'd
like.
We
end with a voice from the movie. And so I will say, we got to do it, Gordon. Okay. From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Spooky.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Fuck
classic
you.
Spooky voice.
Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you enjoyed the episode, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you really want to make our day, you can rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. You can also follow us on social media at TSDW Podcast. We are on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want even more content, you can become a patron at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. We will be back next week with a regular episode. We love you a lot. Bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.